All right, I have hit record once again. I'm going to do the sound test first, and then you go. Is that cool with you? Yeah? All right.
Yeah, that's good.
Foldy, roldy, raidu day. Oh, that's beautiful. All right, your turn. Go.
That's good. Well, I don't believe in anything, but somebody that believes in something. But it's, oh, my God, my wife is screaming in the background. Is that good enough?
Yeah, it's perfect.
Hey, scream fuck, honey. Do it. Do it! All right, that's my sound test.
Hey, y'all. This is Just Be Cousins, and I'm one of your hosts. And with me in the virtual studio is one of your other hosts. And this is going to be our last show, because after the Republicans get done shoving their tax bill down our throats, we're not going to have enough money left to eat, much less do a podcast, and you won't have time to listen to it because you'll be scrapping and scrimping and saving just to feed your kids because of the tax bill that they're passing tonight. And I don't have anything funny to say about that. I'm just really mad, but guess what? I'm getting a lot of followers on Twitter because of it, so I feel pretty good about that.
Damn.
Took me a while to ramp up there. Episode 44, Joe.
Episode 44.
44.
Listen, I'm really happy tonight. You know why?
No. Well, I do, but tell me.
Because I record in my studio.
Yeah.
I just did I did finger quotes, but okay. You didn't see it because this is an auditory presentation.
Yeah.
But let me tell you. This is cool because she doesn't really consider it to be this way, but my wife is going to be a guest on this podcast because my studio also is my garage, which is also my pool room, which is also me staring at my water heater, which is also my dog trying to eat my jeans while they're on my body. There's a lot of different ways that you can use this room. And my wife is going to go ahead and play pool against herself behind us while we're recording, and I'm fucking delighted by that.
I am too.
All right.
I'm very delighted.
Well, I want you to be delighted after that intro. Clearly, you're not delighted about everything.
I really don't want to talk about politics as much as I can.
No, that's not what we do.
No, it's not. I did it in the intro just because it was on my mind, and it is true. You tweet some things about Trump or tax scams or net neutrality, and boom, you get followers on Twitter. I'm telling you, it's a really good way to further your brand. I should do it on our JBC Twitter. I could probably be more crude on it.
How often do you utilize that?
The JBC Twitter?
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't been doing it for several months now. I really need to start doing that so I can further our brand.
Well, you know, one of the things that I think is cowardly about the internet is that people have complete anonymity, so they don't have to take – they don't have to be accountable for anything that they say.
Yeah.
And since we've started this podcast, I realized that kind of inadvertently I've set myself up with that because I don't – nobody knows who I am when I'm representing this show. And then I find myself saying these dastardly things online, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm the asshole that I hate. You know what I mean?
I guess I do. I don't know that you say anything that's dastardly. I mean, you've dropped
you
a few.
You mean online? Because you read the stuff that I write online? I guess it's not dastardly. I don't know. I can tell you that Joe Beth Nelson goes a little bit too far sometimes.
Joe Beth Nelson is to hormones what the Statue of Liberty would be to menopause if she was a real woman. No, that doesn't even make sense. Okay, erase, delete.
No, it doesn't make sense if you don't think about it on a deep level.
I always make sense if you don't think about what I say. And that's how my wife has survived 10 years of marriage. Oh!
Hey! Fucking... All right. Yeah. No, I think... look, man, there's a message... You don't always clue me into it, but almost everything you say has some sort of underlying – either there's an underlying message or there's an underlying cryptic humor. And if those of our listener, Ian, that aren't paying attention won't catch it. Me, I listen to every episode twice, so I catch about half of it.
Okay, I appreciate that. It's not true. Nothing that I say has any kind of value or makes any kind of sense. And if you think it's funny, that's probably because there's something wrong with you, not because I did anything right. So take that to your therapist and tell her she's reminding you of your mother. I don't know. I'm in a weird
mood. Well, suddenly
you're
talking to me because I'm the guy that thinks all this is funny. So, yeah, I will. I'll take it to my therapist and I'll see if I can get to the bottom of this shit.
Get to the bottom of this shit.
Yeah.
Get to the bottom. Okay, so here's some things that are going on. I'm going to say that Christmas season is officially started. Okay, I'm going to say
yes,
it has officially
started. Yes, it has. Can't you tell by all the lights and the Christmas songs?
Yeah. Here, this is what I wrote in my diary that makes sure that it's officially. Let me read it to you.
Wait, hold on. This is a page from your diary?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh shit. Here we go. Let's go.
Okay. Put a scone on a plate, ate the scone, thought, I used a plate for that, so I ate another scone to justify the plate. Then we ran out of pecan pie. We ran out of pumpkin and pecan pie, so I put some pumpkin pie spice whipped cream on a scone. You're welcome. # I guess you can start Christmas songs now.
Oh, my God. Well.
Yeah, I # in my diary. It's true. I do. So.
But you know what? Honestly, the whole thing that I just heard was funny. Did you hear that? That was not my ass. That was somebody on an obnoxious hog.
Oh, really?
And this happens a lot, I understand. Like, I will move the chair and it sounds like a heinous fart.
Yeah.
Does he hear that?
I do. Yeah, that dude is heinous. Heinous hog.
No, that was my butt, but the one before was a motorcycle. And now I've completely lost my train of thought. I was trying to respond to your diary entry. Oh, yeah.
Hashtags.
The whole thing was funny, but the funniest thing is that you are hashtagging in your diary. That is, you're hashtagging on paper.
It's true.
You're writing freehand in a fucking journal with a pen or a pencil. I don't know what you prefer, but that you are hashtagging in your diary.
It's true.
I'm going to go ahead and say it. It's both stupid and interesting.
I think
but doesn't interesting mean stupid anyway?
Pretty much. It's a nice way of saying it, yeah. So given that this is now officially Christmas season has started, I want to show you something that I learned today or, you know, play for you audio-wise. Can I do that?
Oh, please.
It's Christmas-related. Okay.
You know what? I'm glad that we're already going to get into some Christmas things, like preemptively. Yeah. I think that's a good idea. So let's do it. What do you got?
Okay. Let me turn the audio up so you can actually hear this. Gosh, I hope this isn't too loud. All right. First, listen to this. Okay. Was that loud enough? Maybe I can make that louder.
Well, it wasn't loud enough for me, but I don't know how it's coming through for you. But
it didn't come through very loud at all. All right. Let me.
You know, because I'm not going to take it anymore, Jason.
So you did hear it. Shoot. Now I got to find out where it was. It's 3:30. 329. Okay, here we go. Listen again. Ah, shit. That's too early. Ignore this part. Dee Snider's so beautiful. All right, okay. Now start listening. Okay, so you heard that, right?
Yeah, I did. And I agree with you. Dee Snider is beautiful in an ugly Jewish man, transsexual kind of way.
Funny that you should say Jewish. Okay, I'm going to
Actually, I don't know if he's Jewish. He just oh my God, I'm digging myself a hole. Why don't you say something now, quickly?
I'm going to play that for you again. I'm going to try to isolate it this time. Gosh, I hope I don't fucking this up. Whoops. Oh, is it 7? It's 7. Here we go. Okay, here we go. Ready?
Yeah.
What the fuck? That's not where I'm supposed to start. Oh, I'm screwing everything up.
Just try again.
I'm going to try
just
again.
Do it.
I am.
Oh, my God. My wife's playing fucking fetch with my dog in the garage. I'm happy that she's here. I'm just giving you time. I'm buying time for you. Why don't you do – okay, now do your thing.
One more time. Here we go. Okay, now listen to this.
Okay.
Huh?
No fucking way.
Huh?
Whoa. Hold on a second. Let me process that.
Want to hear it again?
Yeah, please.
Okay, that's that.
Now no play, way, dude.
Now you play the other one. Oh, shit. That's the wrong button. I should have just clipped these out so I could have done it over and over again, but I'm lazy.
Okay. My first and the most obvious question possible after hearing something like that is, was that Dee Snider singing the Christmas song?
It was.
That must have been Dee Snider.
That was Dee Snider, yeah.
Okay, I have a lot of questions. Do you want to make comment, or should I just keep asking these questions? Maybe you
ask
know
the question. Ask the question, yeah.
Okay, so one thing that just blasted my mind out of my skull is that the same chord progression and the same melody exists in both We're Not Gonna Take It Anymore. I don't know if that's the title of the song.
Yeah.
It's the fucking Twisted Sister song.
Yeah.
And then the same melody, the same chord progression exists in Come All Ye Faithful. That would have been a big enough revelation. But then I realized Dee Snider knows this and then presented his version of Come All Ye Faithful to draw the connection out explicitly.
Well,
to blow people's minds on purpose, intentionally.
He freely admits that "O Come All Ye Faithful" was the inspiration for the other song that I
we're not going to take it.
We're not going to take it.
What's the name of the song?
We're not going to take it. So yeah, I looked up "We're Not Going to Take It." You should do this, listener, and everyone else. If you don't do this already, there's a song you like for some reason in isolation, like, I mean, Joe and I like Tool, so we listen to all their songs. But if you're like walking the street one day and you're thinking to yourself, you know what, I really like that song, "Shock the Monkey" by Peter Gabriel, go look it up on Wikipedia. There's little facts that pop up. So I was on the internet and I thought I'm gonna listen to Twisted Sister. So I listened to that song, I looked it up on Wikipedia. It said it was inspired by Come All Ye Faithful, and as soon as I read Come All Ye Faithful, the song, the Christmas song, played in my head, and I was like, holy shit, wow. I see, Joe, you gotta understand, I hate Christmas songs, hate them, but now I can kind of like get into it, because every time I hear a Christmas song, I can sing a heavy metal tune that sounds like it. I just gotta find a bunch.
Okay, there's a lot of different directions I can go with this. I want to say, okay, my respect for Dee Snider just went up a couple of notches,
sure,
which puts him at like +3.
Yeah,
he was at one. Now he's at, or he was at zero. Now he's at. No, I don't want to shit on him that bad. I'm just saying, the fact that he did that in what? Okay, I do have more questions. In what context did he do that? Did he explained it and then he presented it? Correct.
No, all I'm
he
saying,
has his own radio show. Like, how did he present that Christmas song?
Okay, so that Christmas version, if you go to YouTube and look for it, it's Twisted Sister, same era as We're Not Going to Take It. They're wearing the same clothes. They're actually, I don't know if they're in the same house, but it's the same kind of thing where they're harassing some family.
Same time, he didn't do it like way later.
As far as I can tell from the video, it looks like it's the same time. And I'm looking at you know, YouTube here, and apparently there's a Twisted Sister version of Silver Bells, and there's a Twisted Sister heavy metal Christmas, I guess, out there. Alice Cooper did Santa Claus Is Coming to Town.
Wow, this is fascinating.
Metallica
shit. I had
did
no
Carol
idea,
of the Bells.
Dude.
Yeah, neither did I. Because like I said, I hate Christmas songs, especially Little Drummer Boy. If I hear that song more than like 3 times a year, I'm not allowed into certain hotels in Las Vegas with large bags, if you know what I'm saying, because I'll snap. I will snap.
Well,
no, it's not too soon,
you know,
because we're three shootings past that one already.
Really, oh man, like we're going right into Christmas, and I'm with you, because I fucking hate Christmas music too. I think a lot of people do, mm-hmm, for good reason. I think we can all unify in kindness and the spirit of giving. around our hatred for Christmas music. But yeah. I also wanted to make a little side comment. I love my wife milling about in the background, but she decided to break down a box. Did you hear that?
Didn't hear it.
She's making herself known. She's going to play pool. She's going to break down boxes. She might even kick the dog, tell him that he's a son of a bitch and get the fuck out of here. She might even do that. Anyway, back to Christmas.
Aren't all dogs sons of bitches, though? I mean, except for the daughters, I guess. Never mind. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, she doesn't mean it in a like pejorative way. It's just literally he's a son of a bitch.
Yeah. Well, go ahead.
She's requested that I don't spread rumors. But anyway, Christmas songs, yes, I hate them. But I turned around a little bit on that because I found some Christmas songs. They're remixes of Christmas songs. And I really like them. I like them so much that I gave Pandora kind of the task.
Oh, really?
I put the one that I really like in, and then I was like, I wonder what Pandora's going to do with this. And really, I was delighted. So, and that was probably 7 years ago when I had this turnaround where like, yes, I do hate Christmas songs, but if you remix them in the right funky ass way, then I might enjoy them. And you know what? Maybe you can give. Can you give the example? We should have done this on the Christmas show, but let's just do it right now. I don't care. Can you put in? I love the name of this DJ. He's like copy paste DJ guy.
Yeah.
His name is Beef Wellington, sir.
Okay.
He's not Sir Beef Wellington. I was calling you, sir. But okay. That's yeah.
Beef Wellington.
Happy and holidays.
Happy holidays. Remix. Yeah,
my
remix.
My favorite fucking Christmas song. Let's hear it.
Okay, let me do what I do, which is just to boom, do that, and then I'm going to bring this up, and then I'm going to go over here, and I'm not...
Every step you take.
It's so true. That is a creepy song, by the way. I just wanted to
fucking
say
fucking hey, we can go into that a little bit later, but continue. Happy
holidays. There you go.
Now, this is just normal.
No, it says Beef Wellington Remix.
Oh, yeah, I know, but...
Oh, okay, I'll be...
Now, listen to this.
Oh, that's nice, Joe. Okay, I have to stop it before we
hit 30... Keep going.
I can't. I have to stop it before we hit 30 seconds because that's how long it takes them to... identify a song and then kick you off for stealing it. I know the Royce always steal every week, but I'm going to start it again. I just had to talk. No, I'm going to start it again. I just had to do it before 30 seconds. So here we go. That is pretty good. That reminds me of Wax Taylor and who's that other guy? Who's that other copy-paste DJ who plays the oldie stuff? Parav Stelar. Yeah. Here's the only Christmas song that I can tolerate, and I don't know if it is a Christmas song. I'll play it here, just a part of it.
Okay. Ooh. Now, that's not Mannheim. Wait, not Mannheim.
I always – I call them that all the time too. Go ahead. I know you're going to get it. Yeah. Say it.
Wait. Okay. Let me think about it because I do – I've seen this band live actually.
Oh, you
and
have?
It blew my mind.
Wow.
Yeah, I have. It is the – God damn it. It's the people that do Christmas songs. Okay. It's the Trans-Siberian Orchestra.
There you go. Yep.
Now, and I didn't – I have my wife here, but she wasn't looking at me at the time. I didn't look that up. I am fascinated with the Trans-Siberian Orchestra for many reasons because they've brought in people that are like glam metal all-stars, like, and say what you want about glam metal, but like some of the guitarists that were professionals in that field, if you want to call it a field, really good guitar players. And then they brought them in to the Trans-Siberian Orchestra. and they play Christmas music kind of like metal style.
Yeah.
And it's nice.
It's pretty good. Pretty good stuff. So there, so that's kind of what I want to talk about at the start of the show, was that there's a metal way of doing Christmas that will help me survive. And not to like go off on a tangent, but if there was a heavy metal way of surviving the Republican tax scam bill, that would be awesome. But let's move on. Unless you wanted to talk about some other Christmas things, because I had another topic to get into.
Well, if headlines, if like disturbing headlines about, you know, tax issues and stuff came through with metal vocals, would that make you happier? And if they were red in the style of hair band,
would that
make you happy?
That would be so. You know, if we were clever, Joe, we would have talked about this before. We would have recorded a little 30-second heavy metal reading of the tax bill. Oh, wait. No, we wouldn't have, because they only released the copy of it 2 fucking hours. Sorry. I'm just going to calm down now, and we're going to move on.
Jason, take a deep breath.
Okay. Well, I'm not supposed to breathe on the microphone, but
I can now, because now I've got my spit guard. Listen, I'm going to try and pop my peas again.
Okay.
Preposterous penis.
Nope, you did not pop a nothing.
See? This thing is great. It's a little foam cover.
I'm gonna get me one. Yeah.
Anyway,
so new subject. Here we go. Have you finished reading Ready Player One?
Yes,
finished it.
God damn, it was good.
You liked that book, huh?
Well, tell me what you – why don't you give me your review of Ready Player One, because
– I literally –
And then I'll tell you.
I literally wrote a review. Not like a published one, but
– can you read that review for me? God damn. I'm hungry to hear exactly your written response to that book.
Okay. I will.
Can you bring that up from the files or
– Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, if you want to just get you, even if you want to like improv a review,
I could freestyle rap it. If you don't care at all, here you go. If you don't care at all for the 80s, the good news is this book is mostly just a catalog. Anyway, I'm not going to do that. I'll just read it. Catalog of 80s artifacts. Not much nostalgia, really. Just lists of TV shows, movies, video games, and music groups with some geek love from a few other decades thrown into the mix. Sort of like watching an episode of I Love the 80s on VH1, which I never do because I sort of despise the 80s. That was my first paragraph in my little mini review. Yeah. Yeah.
Is that the whole thing?
Oh, no, no. There's more. I won't read all of it.
I want you to, but that's, of course, my first.
Okay, you know what? I'm not going to read this next paragraph because it's about writing style, and let's just not get into that. I read it.
Okay, go ahead, Jason. Sorry.
Then it said, like I said, I read it anyway because it's a decent little story, like watching a cheesy action flick. I knew the good guys were going to win and the bad guys were going to be humiliated, but I wanted to witness it. Reminded me of Ender's Game in a way. What Klein, the author, lacks in sentence style, he more than makes up for in creativity. And then there's some more negative stuff. Flat characters who never develop, and an instance of what TV Tropes calls the quick-drawn Chekhov's gun. And I can explain what that is if you want. But then again, I say in my final paragraph, I'm a snob when it comes to books anyway, and it's really hard for me to like anything at all, even if it's good. And I did, throughout the review, say what you said when you were texting me, Joe, which is it's just so much fun. Yeah, it's a fun book. There's a lot of fun stuff going on.
I'm glad to hear you say that.
I'm glad you're glad.
Well, look, man, we're coming up on Christmas time. I don't want to fight right now.
No, no, no. We're not going to fight. We are allowed to have differences of opinion. In fact, I don't want to go off on a tangent. I know I've said that already, but I had an epiphany today about not agreeing with somebody about things. Okay? And then we'll come back to this. Here it is. Let me see if I can articulate it because I haven't put it in words yet. But if God... Okay. Is omnipotent, that is, he's all powerful, he can do anything. Yes. That means he has the power to be real for some people and not exist for others. So it's possible.
That's right. And in omnipotence, you also have the power to be non-existent for some entities.
Yeah. So a person can be an atheist and and interact with people who believe in God, and neither of those two people are necessarily wrong, nor should their points of view even conflict, because God has seen to it that both are true. I'm going to start a church called the Atheist Church, and now I'm really going off on a church. Maybe I could find a way to make there's sort of like an atheist Christmas. What would an atheist Christmas look like? You know, we'll have to come back, Joe, because we're talking about Ready Player One. And you're glad that I'm glad. No, I'm glad you're glad. Tell me what you thought of the book.
All right. I actually agree with everything that you said, but there is a level, there's a layer, maybe several layers, of what I consider genius in that book.
Okay.
Which is, he's bringing in all of these other creations. Now, you didn't speak to that directly, but it's not just nostalgia. He's also like leaning on the creations of other people to create imagery in your brain.
Yep, that's a good point.
That's not just nostalgia. That's like, there are other interesting things that I didn't create that I'm going to bring into the story to make it interesting. Now, if you're like a knee-jerk critic, you can shit all over that book right away, just on that, just from that perspective. Mm-hmm. Right there.
Yes.
I get that, but here's the thing. The game of that book, and it is a game. Yes. The book itself is a video game. And it's based on all of these other, well, he brings in imagery from all sorts of different things, music and video games themselves, many of them early 80s. He brings in a lot of these different things. It does trigger nostalgia, which might seem like a cheap trick, but to me it's not. It's the game that he created with all of these. It's like a collage. The book is like a collage, but it's constructed in such a way that to me it was complex. And to watch what I felt like I was doing was what you do, is you go online and you watch people play a video game. Well, me, and I've never done that before. Well, yeah, I have. I've watched people like play Battletoads and stuff like that, and it's interesting. Well, the book Ready Player One was this new level of that, where I'm watching somebody who created a narrative of a video game that was rather complex, like all the little puzzles and everything that they needed to do to get to the end of the game, I thought were really well conceived. Really well conceived. And just to, that made it exciting for me. But see, I think what you might disagree with me on, given what I've heard already from your review,
yeah,
is that there's no character development. Well, I disagree with that. Well, okay, so maybe the characters are a little bit non-dimensional or like flat.
Yeah.
But I think the comment, I think with his characters, he painted a picture of what we might be. I thought it was kind of a foretelling of what our experience as human beings might be like. The trend of the fact that we send ourselves through this prism of like virtual reality and social media, he took that a couple of steps into the future, and it was interesting, like to hear the whole story be told, half of it be told in this virtual reality, and he didn't even really question it. In fact, he advocated for how intimate that can be.
Yes.
And that was shocking to me. I was like, wait, in my mind, that's like, oh my God, that's society going the wrong direction. Like, we need to be with each other. We need to be face to face. This buffer zone of virtual reality, if you want to call it that, for lack of a better term, that actually distances us from ourselves or from each other. And then we get to then just present ourselves in a very kind of fraudulent way and just amplify what we want to be and present that to one another. That's a part of the book. By the end of the book, I was emotionally captivated, because at the end, the point of it is actually, all of this virtual reality, that's not where happiness lies. Happiness lies between real human beings, face to face. And I liked that they ended the book with that. I thought it was a good message, but I also thought it was really interesting that he wasn't extolling the, I don't even know if that's the right word. He wasn't romanticizing the virtues of virtual reality or social media contact. He was saying that it is real and it can be real, but it's not the best interaction. By the end of the book, you're like, I feel like that was his point. Anyway, so I took a lot of different stuff from the book, I think, maybe than you did. Did any of that occur to you, or was that just my kind of...
I definitely see where you're coming from, and I'm not being facetious when I say that what somebody gets out of a book is always more important than somebody telling them they're wrong or they're right or whatever. I mean, you could say, oh, I read the book, and it's clearly about cockroaches having butt sex with dogs, and I could say, well, I don't see that. But if that's what you see, your analysis just now showed that you got a lot out of the book. You definitely learned some things about society and yourself. And I say that's all valid. And I say from that point of view, it must have been a pretty good book. I didn't get those things myself. That doesn't mean I'm right and you're wrong. It just means, I don't know, that I got a different take. I felt like he didn't make any kind of commentary on the impact of virtual reality. I didn't get that. I felt like, I mean, when I was reading, I felt like, well, he's just using that as an excuse to, you know, kind of have this meta video game about video games. And I, that point you made at the beginning, Joe, when you said that he's using all these nostalgia ticks to boost the visual imagery, that makes a lot of sense. And I agree with you.
That certainly happened.
Yeah.
And I get it. But then I'm kind of a cheap date, because if you do that, maybe that's a cheap trick.
No.
But it worked.
No, I don't think
especially
it's a cheap trick at
all. That book was written for people my age, because
yes,
all you have to do is start saying words like that, and I'm flooded with all sorts of – so it is a nostalgic exercise.
Yeah,
I
absolutely
get that.
Yeah.
But I was also captivated by the puzzle that he made. The book was a puzzle – and there was this conflict that was captivating to me, where it's okay, like, wait, who's going to win? It really was. It was like, who's going to win this? Like, and there were setbacks, and, you know,
yeah,
maybe that's like really stock standard like storytelling too, where it's like, oh, well, the bad guys get a little bit further. I knew that the good guys were going to win. But I just liked the way that he made them win.
Sure.
It was surprising. It was surprising. I didn't find it predictable. Like, I like that. I appreciate any book where I'm really sitting there trying to predict it, and I couldn't quite. There was a couple of things that I did predict.
Sure.
And I called it, and I was proud of myself. Okay. But
okay.
But well, there were also parts of it where I'm like, how the fuck are the good guys going to win now? I thought it was impressive that he set up these situations where it's like, wow, it really looks like they're fucked right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, if I were writing this book, how could they not be fucked? And I couldn't come up with it. And then he came up with it, and I was like, ha, good job. Like, to me, that made me admire his skill as a storyteller, or as a, I don't know, as a game designer, maybe.
Sure, yeah, absolutely. You know, like I said, you rather enjoyed the book, and that makes me think the book is better than I used to think it was. I didn't think it was crap or anything like that, but, I mean, you're an intelligent, thoughtful person, and if you thought the book was really, really good, well, then, you know, I should probably give it another try. And I just might, although it is being made into a movie with Steven Spielberg at the helm. So maybe I'll just go
see
the
movie. Well, that's going to be a visual feast.
Yeah, absolutely.
Again, I'm willing to just, you know, do the nasty plunge into a bunch of nostalgia, and the movie is going to be that for sure.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I mean, just stare at it and smile.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah. So again,
maybe I am a bit of a cheap date, but
No. Look, but, don't sell yourself short just because I'm pooping on things. I mean, I poop on lots of things. For me, the only reason I like to read a book is because the sentences are well crafted. Plot's okay and character, whatever. But one of the most well respected book of our times, including respected as one of his favorites by a person who is a big time reader, a friend of mine. He's a very smart guy, and it's one of his favorite books by Jonathan Franzen called The Corrections. And I thought that book was just shitty. I hated it. I hated every fucking page. And so you see, that's what this Ready Player One guy is up against when he's putting a book in front of me. I'm just going to look at it and go, ugh, I don't think so. I'm a snob. I'm a dick. You can just ignore my opinions.
But I was thinking about this too. Like, you read my book. I'm very close to finishing your book. I told you, especially if I like a book, then I just go to sleep after a paragraph. So like, I'm getting there though.
Sure.
And I really love one of your books. I'm only reading one of them. I plan on reading all of them, but I enjoyed your book. You enjoyed my book. Mm-hmm. And I was just thinking, actually, as I was getting through Ready Player One, I was like, you know what, though? If I wrote this book, and really ask yourself this, if you read that and I had written it, fucking how impressive would that have been for you?
Well,
Really, really, take a moment.
Well, if you had written it, how impressed would I be?
Yeah.
I guess the same amount of impressed I am. Okay, you're putting me in a difficult position here, Joe, because if I say I was...
Yes, I
if
know.
I was saying, if I'm saying I was more impressed, then I'm saying that I wasn't impressed by your book. But if I say I was less impressed, then I'm saying that... I don't know what I'm saying.
I'm not trying to corner you. I'm just saying this. Like... Look, I think my book is a good piece of work. I think it's original. There's not a whole lot of nostalgic shit in it either. It's not a collage of other people's work, as arguably Ready Player One is from a certain perspective. So I get that, and so I understand how you might appreciate my work better than Ready Player One. But I think if I handed you a manuscript and it was Ready Player One and you read through it, I think you'd be like, wow, Joe's really done something interesting. I think you might have been able to give – it might have broken through some thing where you were able to appreciate it more than just some stranger.
Well, that's absolutely going to be true. I mean, I can't be 100% unbiased reading anything that you write because, you know, I know your voice and I don't know how you think, but I can give the benefit of the doubt to a passage in a book that you've written because I know you as opposed to somebody I don't. I don't go into – when I was reading your book, I didn't go in thinking, okay, let's see if this fucker can impress me. I didn't – it wasn't like that at all. I was like, I'm going to enjoy this. I read the first sentence and it was your voice speaking to me, and that kind of, you know, fell away.
I appreciate that, and I feel the same way about your writing. So yeah, like I have an affinity for your voice already, so like it locks you in a little bit. In a way, I get that.
And I see what you're saying.
Here's the other side of that. And by the way, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the book episode of
the second book episode. Yeah, that's
the second book episode.
I planned that. I've already got the cover image for the podcast ready to go. You'll like it. Anyway, go ahead.
Multitasking. That's Jason Mark. But the weird thing is, I wrote that book and I was in a band at the time, and I would sell the book. I would print a bunch of manuscripts and sell it to the people that came to the show. That seemed like and people bought it
because
they came to listen to my music. And then I would say on the mic, I was like, hey, I wrote a vampire book. Anybody want to buy it? And people would come up after the show and fucking buy it. And I think that biased them. Those people were biased, too.
If they had already
enjoyed my music, then they were like, oh, my God, he wrote a vampire book. So people bought it and they read it and they enjoyed it. The people that were closest to me tended to be more critical of the book. You're an exception to that where I haven't heard all of your criticisms of the book, but I felt like you were really open to it, as were the people that came to my shows and wanted to read it.
Yeah.
Because they were familiar with my voice. They were kind of you know, you're into what I do and I'm into what you do. And so you were like, oh, it's Joe's book. Like I expect to enjoy this. And I didn't, it seems that I didn't disappoint you, but
that's right. Yeah. And to your point, I don't want to shit on your friends who read your book and were critical, but my experience has been that when a person critiques something and they know the person who wrote it, and mm-hmm. you know, whether they're harsh or mild, but in some way say, you should not have done this, you should have done this. Basically what they're saying is, you shouldn't have written it the way you do. You should write the way I do. That's been my experience. Now,
you should be catering to me. And honestly,
just catering to me. You should write the way I write. And I'm not trying to say that they're jealous, Joe, but if they're saying things like, hey, you got a typo here, or this plot point is confusing, that's useful for you, right? But if they say, I didn't like it when blah, 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 blah. See, there's a point in your book, and I'm not going to say what it is, but there's a point in your book where I thought to myself, I wouldn't have done that.
Okay. But that doesn't mean, and I want to hear about that.
Okay, but that doesn't mean there's anything wrong with it. It's just not how I would do it. So there's no point in me telling you that wasn't any good. So I guess what I'm getting at is I can shit all over Ready Player One because I don't know the guy. But if you wrote it, there'd be no point shitting all over it because I want to read Joe's work. The guy who wrote it, what's his name? Klein? Stephen Klein? David Klein?
Ernest Klein.
Thank you. I read that book and now I am done. I don't need to read anything else by him. But every time say a Jeff Nicholson puts out a book, I'm going to read it because I like his writing, so he gets the benefit of the doubt too, and therefore I can't really be unbiased. You know, some people are like that with Stephen King. Stephen King has written some really good books. He's also written some really shitty books, and there are people who love those shitty books because they love Stephen King. It doesn't matter.
I'm kind of just I'm a big cheerleader for Stephen King, and so I probably do forgive him for that. Yeah. It'll appear in my mind as I'm reading. I'm like, I don't like that line. Or like the way that he took this is silly. That's silly.
Yeah.
But then I go, but I just love Stephen King.
Yeah.
Let's keep going. Let's just keep going. He provides such quality entertainment so consistently for me, and he has for years, that I'm not gonna nitpick this one. I have a relationship with Stephen King. Well, exactly. It's a one-way relationship.
No, that is a great way to put it. Both of the things you said is that he delivers and you have a relationship. And, you know, if we look at what he's doing as he's in the utility services, you get your gas, your electric, your fun horror novels, and your water, right? You got all those things coming in the way they're supposed to, and they're always consistent on time. And if there's ever a fuck-up, they fix it, and you know, you're happy to pay the bills, right? And that sounds like I'm trying to make it all, you know, quotidian and pedestrian and what's the word, banal. But no, I'm just trying to say that if you like somebody, you're going to like what they do, even if it's not likable for anybody else. I liked your book, Joe, because I like you. And I think there's nothing wrong with that. If everyone I knew was a writer and all I read were my friend's book, that would be a fantasy world I would be glad to live in. Love to.
Yeah, but you know, we'd have to look. I like that you enjoyed my book because, Jason, if I weren't effective as a storyteller, or if my story really did suck, you would be able to tell me that, and you wouldn't have enjoyed the fucking book for real.
Yeah.
Now correct me if I'm wrong. Like if I gave you if I just slopped a turd in front of you and said read this, you wouldn't have just. Well, I don't know. Maybe you would have just patronized me.
Well, here's the
whole way. I don't think so, dude. I don't think so.
Well, here's the thing. So,
you are a book snob. You're also someone who just reads just voraciously all the time, and you read shit books. You read good books.
Yeah.
And you're pretty honest about how that goes for you and what books you think are good and what books you think are pieces of shit. Now, if my book was a pure piece of shit, you wouldn't have been able to just have your bias override that. You would have been like, look, I like Joe's voice, but what he's doing here is not effective. This is not working. And I should hope that you have the courage to tell me such a thing. If your book was shit, I wouldn't have done it on the podcast, but I would have said like, wow, this is really jumbled, dude. Like, if you want it to be better, here's my ideas.
Yeah.
I couldn't keep with it. I was put off by it. Like, I would have told you that, you know?
Right.
I might have a bias, but behind all of this bias is also, like, a desire to be entertained and an appreciation of good work.
Absolutely. Yes, yes. I do get what you're saying. But I think I'll take it all the way back to the one of the things I thought I said at the beginning of this conversation, which is what a reader gets out of a book is all that matters. It doesn't matter what the author meant. It doesn't matter what the critics say the author meant. As long as the reader is getting something, then that's what the book is about for that reader, which is why, you know, when somebody publishes a book and 1,000 people read it, that's 1,000 different books, essentially. So, you know, there are a lot of people who say that the Twilight books are just terrible. Now, I haven't read them, so I can't say that.
But a lot of people
have said that they're terrible. However, I know intelligent, thoughtful people who read the books and said, one, yeah, it wasn't very good, but I liked it a lot. And these are intelligent people.
I know people like that, too.
Yeah.
That was their exact sentiment.
Yeah. You're like, yeah, this is.
I don't know if it was very good, but I just liked it.
Yeah. And there you go. So
isn't that interesting? Okay.
So, Joe, you would have to write way worse than even that before I'm going to be saying, hey, you should stop writing. Because really that's what it comes to. I'm not so awesome that I can say to you, here's how your writing can go from mediocre to brilliant. But what I can do is say, you have no business using words. Stop it. But you're not going to be at that level because you're an intelligent person. I honestly, genuinely believe, I've said this for all of my adult life where I was in a teaching or tutoring atmosphere. I have said that anybody who is reasonably intelligent can write as long as they want to. And if you want to write 80,000 words, and you do, chances are it's going to be readable unless you're a fucking idiot. Now, does that mean it's going to win a prize? No. Doesn't necessarily mean it's going to win prizes.
Well, and I can tell you just from my own experience that if you make it to 80,000 words, you're going to be better at it at the end of the book than you were at the beginning. Oh, thank you, honey. I was about to make comment on this, and this is a good segue to the next part of the conversation. Hold on a second.
Okay.
My wife is lighting my cigarette.
Awesome. And my wife is snoring. And that's how we roll on JBC. We need to get a jingle so we can always like fill in the gaps. Like JBC, JBC. I don't know. Oh, no, it's got to be a heavy metal thing. What's your favorite heavy metal riff? That will be the JBC riff.
Are you actually asking me that? Or
yeah, but you
see,
I'm changing the subject and I'm putting you on the spot. Let's go back to what you were saying. You're going to segue. You said.
Well, it's not much of a segue. I was just going to – I'm like, hey, you know, we're talking about books. We're talking about books. We're talking about our books.
Yeah.
And, you know, none of our listener have read either of our books. So I feel like we, you know, we need to limit our time on this subject.
Okay.
Though maybe we have sold our books. Though we haven't given any direction to any of our listener as to how to read the books. So – I was just sitting here, and when I'm doing the podcast, breathing – oh, my God. That's my very angry dog.
That's Jesus barking Christ, right?
Yeah, that's Jesus barking Christ. He's angry at me for what I'm about to say.
Okay.
Because he's very intuitive.
Yeah.
But see, when I'm on the podcast, especially lately, and this is not healthy at all, but breathing nicotine into my lungs is like breathing oxygen.
Okay.
I have a whole pack of cigarettes here, and I was sitting here, and I felt like I was starting to suffocate. You know why? Because there was no lighter. You know why there was no lighter? Because my wife stole the fucking lighter.
Yeah.
She walked away with the lighter, and I'm looking around. I'm suffocating here. I did okay, and then right when I was about to make comment on it, I turned around, and my wife was there lighting my cigarette for me.
Oh, there you go. That's love right there.
There
it
is.
That is love.
That's romance.
Yeah.
And cancer.
And what?
Lung cancer.
Oh, and cancer. Okay, gotcha. Yes. Yeah. Well, here, you know, you said this is kind of turning into the book episode, which is sort of what my intention was before we got started. But we could tie it to Christmas
you crafty bitch.
I'm a crafty bitch. We can tie it to Christmas in as much as I'm thinking this year I'm just going to cop out on the gifts and just give people books. I mean, fuck it. I'm going to send you a book. I just now thought of that.
Books are great gifts. Yeah,
I think they are. It is a cop out because you don't do a lot of work, but basically, and the thing is if you want to put a little bit of effort into it, you could try to give books to people that they will like. But I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to give people books that I liked and say, here, here's something I liked.
I think that's more meaningful. Like, I'm not going to try and figure out what you like. I guess that's kind of touching, but I think it's even cooler to be like, I like this book. Maybe you'll like it too. It's a let's share this experience. Like, I liked it.
Yeah.
Maybe you'll like it. Then we can share the experience. That's an intimate gift.
What if I give everybody the same book though? Because that's kind of, I'm starting to think I'm going to do that.
Well, if it's the anarchist cookbook, then you're a fucking barking up the wrong tree with everyone all the time.
Probably. The thing is, you mentioned it. I am a voracious. I read a lot.
You're both ferocious and voracious, yeah. Which if you combine them is ferocious.
I am. I'm whatever the word is, and I don't know what I was going to say. Oh, if someone gave me a book, I would just read it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, you're easy. You're now just giving me. I know exactly what to do all the time for your birthday, for Christmas, for everything. I'm going to pick any book. I don't give a shit what it is. I'm going to pull it. I'm going to go into Barnes & Noble and walk down a random aisle, not even look, and pull a book off of the fucking shelf. Here's the risk. You've probably already read it, but because you've read fucking 100,000 books. But then I'm just going to wrap it up and I'm send it to you. Happy birthday, Jason.
Yeah,
Merry fucking Christmas.
That would be
whatever
awesome.
You want. It doesn't matter. And you're going to read it. It doesn't matter. Guess what? Even if you've read it before, you're going to fucking read it again.
I'll read it again just because Joe sent it to me. I am easy. I guess for me, what I was getting at is – God, this sounds really snobby, but who gives a fuck? I was going to say that giving somebody a book is kind of like saying, hey, I need you to spend a significant amount of time doing something that you weren't going to do, you know? Because, I mean, I don't know how fast you read. For me, 300 page.
Very slowly, Jason.
Yeah, well, that's what you said. 300 page novel, I can usually get through in a week if I'm reading for about an hour a day. I guess I'm saying I don't know. I can't do the math in my head, but.
I'm impressed with that. Well, and you have been. Are you reaching your goal? I hate to interrupt you on this,
that's
but
okay.
Are you reaching your goal of a book a week?
Yeah, I've got three
You're
books
on
left.
Target for that.
Yeah, I got three books left to go, and if I read three more books, I will have hit 52. So that won't be a problem because I'm in the middle of a book now. So when that one's done, it'll just be two more. And you know, Christmas is coming up, time off, so plenty of time to read. Yeah.
Well, you'd be proud of me because again, I'll lie to a motherfucker and tell him that I read a book, but actually I just listened to it while I was doing yard work. I have listened to several books.
See, and that to me is the same as reading. I mean, some people will say, no, it's not. I'm like, yeah, fuck you. It's words going in a brain, and you can talk about it.
I'm glad that you give me that credit. But I actually prefer to read a book. I'm reading your book. I'm almost done with it. But I read – again – I read, quote unquote, The Disaster Artist, which I thought was fascinating, and then I read Ready Player One. I'm really enjoying this. Like, I just, when I'm driving around doing errands, I'm quote unquote reading a book. I'm doing yard work. I'm reading a book. I'm getting to be well read again. Except I haven't read a goddamn thing except for your book.
Wait a minute. There's a book called The Disaster Artist?
Yeah. Can we talk about that for a minute?
Yeah, I know there's a movie called that, but I didn't know there's a book.
It's based on a book, and the book is based on the making of the fucking worst movie ever made.
Okay,
you ever heard of The Room?
Yeah,
or The Room?
Yeah, it's a
nonfiction
book.
Well, that's what
this
is all about. That's what it's all about,
okay.
Is The Room. And it's all fascinating to me because someone who was focused on being famous and they – I don't even – You know what, man? I don't even want to fucking open this can of worms. Let's just say this to you, Jason, and to our listener, Ian. The Room is a fascinating piece of work because it is a steaming turd. It's so fucking bad. Mm-hmm. It's so bad. And then how the fuck did that movie get made? And that's where the book came from. And now we have James Franco making a movie about the making of the fucking worst movie. It's maybe I'm fascinated in it because I'm fascinated by like meta, you know, stepping out layer by layer, meta reflections and artistic projects. And the center of this steaming turd, this meta turd, if you will, is The Room. And
yes.
And you know what? If you're not familiar with any of this, I would like to have a whole goddamn episode. It's in 2018. Let's have a whole episode on The Room and everything that has sharded out, like pinwheel sharded out to a great radius. There's shit all over the world that has been sprayed from the butthole of this book or this movie. Then it turned to a book and then to another movie. It's unbelievable.
While you've been
just
talking,
take that. I hope I've sold you on this, but yeah, The Disaster Artist. The movie's about to come out. The movie that the book that the movie is. Oh, I'm getting confused even just thinking about it.
I hear you.
It was a really good book.
I am looking for a copy of it now. I will add it to my list. So I have.
This is one of the books where I would recommend you listen to it because the guy that's reading it does an impersonation of the asshole from the original shithead movie, and it's got to be funnier just because every line of dialogue from the silly guy that made the movie is impersonated. Again, I feel like I'm talking in circles here, but it's hard not to. But listen, actually, I would recommend that you listen to the book because the guy doing the impersonation of the idiot that made the movie is marvelous.
Marvelous. Okay. Well, I'm going to put it on my list one way or another. I'll get to it.
By the way, do you have an actual list?
I have,
or is that just in your mind?
Kind
like,
of.
Okay,
I mean, yeah, I've got – yeah, the truth of the matter is I have a I have a Google Doc spreadsheet. Is that what they're called? A Google Sheet that's dedicated to just
books. Well, that's one hell of a list. That's not just, you know, pencil on a notepad like a Google Doc. That's pretty good.
Yeah, I have one that has all of the Booker Prize books that have ever been long listed, and I'm going through that list. And then I've got another one. Like if I come across, like I'm on the line and it says, hey, here's the 10 best books of 2017. And if three of them look worth reading, I'll copy the whole list and then save it so I can go find it later. Not that I'm going to read every single book on all these lists. It's just a matter of when I finish a book and I'm like, oh crap, I don't know what to read.
You want ideas for your next book.
Yeah.
To
yeah.
Read. I get it.
Although right now it's funny because last week I finished a book called Who is Teddy Villanova by one of my favorite writers of all time, Thomas Berger. And so I went to Goodreads to record the fact that I wrote it, you know, or read it rather. And they popped up with an ad for a TV show that's going to be coming out soon based on a book called The Alienist. And I'm going to be honest with you, Dakota Fanning is in the TV show and I like her. I think she's brilliant. And I thought, well, if I like her and she's in it, maybe I'll like the book. And so I looked it up and I was able to find a copy of it at my library, so I don't have to pay for anything. So now I'm in the middle of that one. And then when I'm done with that book, I have to read this nonfiction book about education because this person I know just switched jobs and he was inspired by this book. And so I have to read that. And then I'm going to read The Disaster Artist. And then, then I'll be done for the year. Hooray! Anyway.
Well, would that'll be your quota? Because we are coming to the end here.
Yeah.
So, okay.
That'll be my quota.
Wow. Well, I want to say I'm always impressed with your running. Like how many – goddamn. Do you know how many miles you've run this year?
I can look it up.
You can look that up? You What? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
You can look it up. You've logged the miles. You've logged them.
Yeah.
So now you can tell me.
I have a GPS
watch. You don't
have it
in your mind. You have it on a Google Doc.
No, no. I have a GPS watch, and every time I run, it saves it to the internet for me, and so I can just go see what it says. Let's see. I don't know why you really want to know this. It's not very far. Certainly not my furthest year. And compared to other hardcore runners, it's not even close. Let's see. I'll just go to Strava. That's better. I was going to go to Garmin, but Strava I think is easier to get through. But you were telling me how much you love me and how I impressed the crap out of you. What was is that what you were saying?
Well, I didn't say how much I love you, but I do love you. It's coming to Christmas time. That's appropriate, right? Now look, you've probably – how about this? I'm going to go ahead and guess how many miles you've run this year.
Okay. I haven't found the number yet, but – oh, I just found it. That's not very far. Okay. Well, good enough.
Again, well, I'm going to say you've probably run – damn. How about 150 miles?
Okay. See, I was scared you were going to say something
and
like –
I'm lowballing you.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to be like, you've run 20,000 miles. And you'd be like, well, it's more like 1,000, dickhead.
It's not 1,000. I was scared you were going to say something like 2,000. But 150 miles, no. I can get through. And
you
this
top
is,
that for sure.
150
right?
miles in two is about 2 months worth of running. Yeah.
Oh, see? Yeah. Oh, fucking A.
And again – there are other people who run that in a week, but not me. So anyway, no, I've run. Do you want to guess again? Or no, I kind of told you it's 673 according to this, and I know that I'll be doing five tomorrow. I probably will hit 20. I'll probably hit 700 before the end of the year, but again, that's not anything brilliant. See, I only ran 500 last year.
I just came up with a really disgusting joke to tell, but my wife's in the room. I'm going to do it anyway. So you've run how many miles again?
673.
That's a lot. Okay. So I want to tell you how many miles of my cock that I've masturbated. I think I'm reaching about 500. Now, that's only – now I'm going to be generous here.
Yeah.
6 inches. Let's that's 6 inches.
Okay.
But that's one direction of stroke. And then there's the other direction. So that's a foot.
Okay.
Every jack.
Every jack is a foot.
It's called jack.
Every jack loop.
Every jack is a foot.
Yeah.
And now 500 miles, just do the math.
That's what, 25,000 feet? More than that, 28, 27?
is that true?
Miles in feet. I'll just ask Google, and it's 26,400. So yeah.
Anyway, I think that you'd be proud of yourself that you've ran more miles than I have jacked.
Yeah, I guess tomorrow I'm going to go. Tomorrow I'm going to go run a Joe Life Jack's worth of miles. Did that make sense?
Yes. Yes, it did.
I think from now on.
Maybe this is a good place to end the show.
Yeah, we're
definitely
at it.
Where are we at? Can you tell me the minute?
We are at many minutes. We're at what 63 minutes. So yeah, let's.
Oh damn, we went over
just a little bit. Probably because I was trying to find how many miles I ran because you were blowing smoke up my butt because you're a nice guy.
Blowing smoke up a butt seems like an unpleasant thing, but what I was trying to do was make you feel good about your work and your accomplishments.
Well, thank you.
So maybe it's not smoke in your butt, because smoke in your butt is unpleasant.
I've never had smoke in my butt. I don't know, but I think I don't know what that phrase means. I appreciate what you were doing, and that was a very nice birthday gift you've given to me. Now, it's not my birthday, but I'm still going to take it as a birthday gift.
Well, and Christmas gifts, see, tie this back a little bit.
Yeah.
This has kind of been a preemptive, like, it's a little Christmassy.
Yeah.
And then because a book is a perfect Christmas gift, as far as I'm concerned, it's also a book episode. So yeah. We're like, we mix it up a little bit. As soon as Thanksgiving is over, it's automatically Christmas. So yeah. We jumped in. We're culturally kind of...
We're on fleek.
Yeah, thank you. Oh, my God, that's my least favorite saying ever. On fleek. Just said it. And I just said it too. Jesus.
Yeah.
Anyway, then we talked about books, which is the perfect Christmas gift.
Yeah.
As we end the show, I wanted to say, I think either next week or the week after, we should have a Christmas episode where we return to ads and arguments.
Yes.
And
we have not
full
done
episode with all the bells and whistles of JVC.
I agree. We have not done ads for a while now, and I'm ready. I'm ready and raring. Raring and ready.
So let's do that. I don't know. We'll talk off the air, but either next week or the week after, let's do a Christmas episode and bring it. All the ads.
I'm
going to obscenitize a Christmas song. I said it. I'm going to do it.
I've got a hard on now. That's awesome.
You have a Christmas hard on?
I got a... It's standing up like a fir tree. And it's going to come after your fir pie. I don't know what I'm saying, Joe. I'm not even drinking right now. I'm going to increase the volume and end the show. Good night. On fleek!
Big breath.